At 10 o'clock, they're happy. How is she dead 2 hours later?
When a San Diego police officer is found dead in her home, who investigates? Follow One of Their Own, a new podcast from KPBS, wherever you listen.
One unassuming day in the mid-1980s, when 20-year-old Jan Dirk de Vilde was living in a squat in the Netherlands, the doorbell rang. At the time, Jan Dirk was part of an historic protest movement, but the visitor at the door would quietly ignite a different kind of revolution. They were dropping off an old, dusty machine they thought Jan Dirk's squat might be able to use.
But nobody wanted to have it. It was there in the main space. And then I started using it as a gimmick.
The moment set off a chain reaction, launching a global creative movement. And that machine was a stencil printer.
These are drums. I'm just changing the drum colors right now. With Rizzo, you print a color at a time.
This is Kevin Huen at Bernal Books in Normal Heights. He's using a Rizzograph printer, an updated version of what was dropped off at Jan Dirk's squat 40 years ago.
People call it a mix between screen printing and just a copy machine, which is pretty accurate because it feels like this physical process itself is all digital.
Like, for example, if it wasn't for Jan Dirk getting that unusual machine all those years ago and experimenting with it, Kevin might not be here using the Rizzograph today.
They kind of just languished in church basements and like school storage rooms until artists got a hold of them and started like using them again.
Even if you don't know what a Rizzograph is, you might still recognize its distinctive prints. Vibrant colors, a matte finish, slight imperfections. It's gone kind of mainstream in the past few years. Today, we're tracing this strange, unlikely journey of the Rizzograph in art, from a squat in the Netherlands to its early American pioneers, and finally to a community print studio in San Diego. It's a story about artists repurposing a machine never meant for art. A machine that became obsolete and found an unlikely second life. But the Rizzograph story is bigger than printing. This quirky machine has fueled scrappy DIY groups all over the map. Communities built outside the mainstream, authentic, supportive, and a little rebellious. Rebellious in the sense of doing something different together to change the world they're living in. One of those communities is right here in San Diego.
People are guided by like love more than anything else and support. And I think that's why it's grown so organically and beautifully and supported so many people.
What does a once cast aside printing technology have to do with a local group's hope to keep artists making art in San Diego? And how can that work sustain genuine connections, especially in the midst of this tech-fueled loneliness epidemic? To find out, we're going back to where it all began. From KPBS Public Media, this is The Finest, a podcast about the people, art, and movements redefining culture in San Diego. I'm Julia Dixon Evans.
Corporate underwriting on KPBS offers a unique opportunity for brands to demonstrate their corporate social responsibility as public media brings light to important causes. Your investment can showcase your brand's values and commitment to the public good. Email corporate support at kpbs.org.
Today, Jan Dirk runs Canoost in Nijmegen, an independent print studio and collective in the Netherlands. They're known as the pioneers of riso printing.
But I think it's funny that it's so big nowadays. Till 2000, we were more or less the only riso printer.
Jan Dirk became an early origin point for the riso art movement in the Western world. Because riso printing in art is so new, it's relatively easy to trace its history. And starting from Jan Dirk and Canoost, you can trace a web of influence that spreads around the globe. They weren't trying to launch a movement. They were just experimenting. And it all unfolded while they were living in a perfect setting for pushing limits, but one that was far from idyllic.
There was a big squatting movement as a form of protest against the city government, and there were a lot of squats.
Squatting is when people live in or occupy abandoned buildings without permission or without paying rents. In the early 1980s, Nijmegen saw a serious shortage of affordable housing. The city council was conservative, and young people were being pushed out.
It was pretty intense. So at one point, there were maybe 80 or 90 squats.
There were fires, riots, police and military were even deployed to suppress the movement. Jan Dirk and his friends moved into an abandoned bank at the center of the conflict. Others in the movement took over an elaborate network of old school buildings and warehouses.
It was sort of a parallel universe, so everything was inside there. There was their own printer, they had their own theater, there was a bar, they had their own radio, and they had actually two bars. And the squat where I was only the bookshop.
The squatters in Nijmegen reacted to the problems they saw in their own society by creating an alternative one. This kind of fierce independence, working outside the mainstream society and economy, this is the DIY ethos in a nutshell.
Most of the squatters came from the activist background. I was more interested like in the punk movement and the do-it-yourself movements.
And in Jan Dirk's bookshop Squat, he started printing.
The squatters newspaper from Nijmegen, that's where I learned the first things about printing.
At that point, Jan Dirk used an offset printer, which produces precise prints using plates, ink rollers, and cylinders. But stencil printers work with a master, essentially a stencil with open and closed areas. The ink is pushed through the open areas, and all the copies are made from that original master. Jan Dirk had heard of stencil machines, but he didn't think much of them.
The offset printer, which had a higher quality, made me a little bit snobby, like, I'm not going to use stencil machines because they are really activist or for schools and they have bad quality.
But then one showed up at his front door. This stencil printer was old. Nobody wanted it or understood its value. But Jan Dirk was curious enough to bring it back to life.
And then when I looked at it, I could see there was some image on it, text of a school, which was from the 60s.
This is a universal stencil printing experience. You inherit an old machine that's been tossed aside, replaced by a more modern printer, but it still has the master in it from the last print job it performed.
So I just went to a stationery shop and bought ink there and put it in, and then I could print something which was put on the machine 25 years ago.
This was among the first of hundreds of stencil printer resurrections that would occur all over the world.
And then I found out the good things about the machine.
He liked how he didn't have to clean the machine as often, but also how it printed one vivid color at a time. How its imprecise nature made every print a little different and unpredictable in an interesting way. With his DIY and punk background, Jan Dirk saw value, even beauty, in this discarded and forgotten thing. And he realized that the technical weaknesses of the tool, the stuff he at first dismissed, could actually be strengths. A couple years after the machine showed up on his doorstep, he made his first stencil-printed zine, a humble book that would change his life and ripple across the art world.
And then one point I just thought, okay, now I know the machine, and I stapled everything in. And then I went to Amsterdam with somebody, and then there was one bookshop who thought it was really attracted by it, and they sold like hundreds of copies.
Jan Dirk's stencil machine experiment was a hit. He and his friends continued tinkering, and their distinctive, colorful prints turned heads and attracted artists curious about the aesthetics. Along with a few other collaborators, Jan Dirk launched Knust. They eventually upgraded to a risograph machine, which creates its stencil masters digitally and prints more consistently. With their Riso machine, they created zines and prints with a unique visual texture with a matte finish, different from the gloss of conventional ink. And soon, the creatives at Knust were teaching others how to use a risograph in art. And they established a sort of artist residency program, offering space for artists to live, work, create, and learn.
We didn't know what residencies were. But if somebody liked the process, they had to come to us. We had a lot of people from everywhere come wanting to print.
The Riso art community they jump-started was open and accessible, but still relatively small and very niche, mostly in Europe. But about 25 years after Jan Dirk first started using a stencil machine in his squat, that started to change. Riso printing started to spread.
Till around 2010, we could keep track of all the artists and designers who were using the machines, but now it's undoable.
And around 2010, one of Knust's Riso-printed books crossed the ocean and ended up in the hands of an artist in Michigan. It was a seed that would grow an American Riso-printing world.
The first book that made me think, oh my God, this is what Riso can do and what it is, that was Knust. A Knust book is the thing that like really convinced me that this is what I have to get involved in.
This is George Weider. When he first became enamored with Knust Riso prints, there were very few Riso printers in the United States. George was already into printing, making posters in his own version of Jan Dirk's DIY scene.
I am the co-founder of this place called the Division Avenue Arts Collective. It was an all-ages music and art venue in downtown Grand Rapids. Community potlucks, Sunday soups, which is like a micro-granting thing. And the idea is that you would get together, share a bowl of soup, everyone would pitch in $5, and then we would hear people's artistic or creative project ideas and then vote. And then whoever got the most votes would get the full amount. In a town that didn't really have much of a functional arts council, it was a way to do like some direct funding of creative projects.
But the DIY ethos, at least at first, is not what attracted George to Knust's prints. He just loved the way they looked and felt.
I've never been a huge fan of Xerox. I don't like things that are shiny. I don't like the idea of melting plastic to paper as a way of making a mark. So the vividness of the color, the way that the ink sits on and then gets absorbed by the paper, those are two things that are really, really important to me. And once I started looking up and really becoming a fan of all of these European presses, I started looking for a machine of my own. And that's where I learned they were everywhere.
Risograph printing in art has a different trajectory and story from commercial Riso printing. Riso Kagaku Corporation, known now as Riso, is a Japanese brand. After World War II, Japan faced supply shortages and extensive import and trade restrictions. So the founder invented an ink that could be produced domestically and then eventually developed the risograph machine, an advanced stencil printer to use that ink. Back in the 80s and 90s, back when Jan Dirk and the folks at Knust were forging the machine's path in art pretty much on their own, risographs were still in operation and still a big deal with large businesses and institutions around the world.
Any place where you're making a million copies of the same thing, schools, hospitals, I know the American military had a really huge contract. I've heard about RISAs on submarines, and it's so much more economically efficient to print a leaflet on a RISA than it is to do that on a inkjet, or even worse, a laser jet, where they're reforming the image with every instance. With a RISA, you just make the image once and then you run a million copies through it. It's really perfect for this type of thing.
But in the 2000s, printer and copier tech just got better, and those old stencil machines became obsolete, banished to basements around the world to collect dust.
Grand Rapids is a place that has historically a lot of churches. And so I found out that each one of them at one point had a RISO.
George became one of the first American artists to search those basements for forgotten risograph printers.
I bought my first machine in 2010, but I really started publishing stuff in 2011. I spent about a year trying to learn the machine. And that year of struggle is kind of what led to the rest of my life with relationship to RISO, because that's when I realized I was like completely on my own. There was no RISA community in the United States in particular whatsoever at that time.
He reached out to European RISO artists like Jan Dirk at Canoost for support. The more he learned, the more he fell in love. He embraced the challenge of printing one color at a time and separating the images into layers. And he began to accept and appreciate the machine's unpredictability and let go of his own perfectionism.
But ultimately, what really, really kept me going is, as community started to form, that's been the best part.
Gradually, more American artists began following in George's footsteps, unearthing their own machines for their own creative practice. These artists became friends online.
We just started talking every day about print.
And George became the documentarian of the burgeoning movement through a wiki-style website.
I started this project called the Atlas of Modern Risography, which is meant to be sort of a census of people using RISOs around the world, because it felt like there wouldn't possibly be a community unless we knew each other existed. Now I pretty much don't add anything, and there's over 1,000 listings.
There's something inherently rebellious in the RISO printing movement. In a way, it's defying the natural course of technology. The risograph had its great run, just like the telegraph and the fax machine, and better printers and copiers came along and made it obsolete. But this art movement is refusing to let it die and making its own alternate reality where this old tech is becoming fresh and vibrant again. And the community of DIY-minded people like Knust and George that have shepherded this movement and ethos also has a stronghold right here in San Diego. We'll take you there after the break. Stay with us.
Hola, friends. In this episode of Port of Entry, we explore the efforts that made Assembly Bill 91 a reality.
A state bill that offers students south of the border a chance at affordable education in California.
We chat with the individuals behind this bill and the advocates working tirelessly to keep the dream of education alive for all trans-border students.
You don't want to miss this episode. Catch it wherever you get your podcasts.
As the RISO community spread across the U.S., artists began organizing meetings. At the first North American RISO conference, held in Chicago in 2017, George said he met Nick Bernal, who co-founded Bernal Books with his wife, Manda. Nick and Manda grew up together in San Diego and met in junior high school.
When I was 21, I got married, and then we've just been together forever and ever and ever.
Around the time of that conference, Nick had discovered risograph printing, and he convinced Manda to attend a risograph workshop with him in LA.
I was like super into it right away after that. Nick already knew that he was gonna like it a lot.
Shortly after, they ran into a friend at an art show.
So we just told him that we took this workshop. We wished that there was a machine down here, and he said, well, I have a machine and it's broken and it's in my friend's garage. If you think you could fix it, you could totally use it. And I was like, sure, I'll fix it. I haven't fixed anything, like really anything in my life. It's like, yeah, I could do that. So then we picked it up in Chula Vista, and I found a tech manual online, like PDF. And I found a bunch of old threads from like this message board called CopyTechNet from like 2010. And like figured out how to get this door to close on this machine and get this like drum unstuck. And then I freaking printed it, what was on the drum already. And it was an ad for a nail salon that was around the corner from where I grew up in Santee. And that's when I realized that this machine had been at the print shop that was next to my house. This Riso was just there like that whole time. So that was the first machine I had, and it just had like one drum.
Nick and Manda set up their Riso machine in a back room at Verbatim Books in North Park, where they both worked. They invited people in to experiment, learn, and print together, DIY style. They called their project Burn All Books.
We're really just art lovers and like doodlers, and like neither of us had any formal arts background or education.
Let me tell you a little story about the Risograph and me. I first met Manda and Nick when they were getting started with Burn All Books and became fascinated by the unusual ephemeral output of the Risograph. At the time, I was struggling with creativity in a big way. I'd recently published my first novel through the traditional publishing process, and the pressure of creating the next thing was an anxiety I was not prepared for. I was unable to write anything new for fear of it not being good enough to publish again, feeling like I needed to knock it out of the park this time. Creating something simply for the joy of following a spark felt out of reach, and that made me feel detached from the creative community. But Risograph printing and the local DIY art scene offered a different path, supporting artists right where they were. The Risograph movement seems all about that joy and spark. It's accessible, welcoming, and built on the shoulders of community, of artists supporting artists. Printing one of my short stories on Risograph and holding it in my hands felt revolutionary, not just for my own creative pursuits, but I felt part of the cultural fabric of the city again, just from a sheet of paper and ink. One of the first things Nick and Manda told me 1 year into Burn All Books was that they wanted to do their part to keep artists in San Diego by offering viable printing options locally and fostering a community of DIY-minded creatives to share ideas and bring them to life.
We like to point at like others. We like to like guide people to others. In San Diego, we forget that there's such a rich like history of like artists here. I don't know, we love it here. That's why we're staying here and making stuff.
So they built a little Riso world here, publishing zines and literary journals and a monthly mail mag with local writing and art. During COVID, they had to close their shop behind Verbatim Books, and the bigger project went on a break. It could have been the end of the Riso community experiment, but in the midst of their hibernation, one of their friends scoped out a huge opportunity.
And our friend Ali, who I always call like the DIY real estate agent, because he's just always like scoping for rent signs and like texting people, messaged us that this space was open.
Since I've been reporting on art in San Diego, countless indie art spaces have been shuttered, whether from losing a lease or the artists moving away. Finding and keeping a space is essential to creating and sharing art. It harkens back to the squatters in the Netherlands, that fundamental need to have a space to gather, organize, and create. Here in San Diego, it's a constant struggle for artists or arts organizations. The cost of real estate exacerbates the problem. So it was a big deal when Manda and Nick's DIY real estate friend found them a strange but affordable space, an old TV shop on the edge of Normal Heights. And like so much of what they have accomplished, finding the spot was a group effort.
You need like a network of people who want to help you. That's like something cobbled together very slowly over a long period of time. I just feel like so much of our success to me like has felt like a combination of like flukes and like really wonderful like favors and opportunities.
That building now houses a store, gallery, and printing studio for Bernal Books and the headquarters for Scanners Archive, their nonprofit community zine archive. Bernal Books also operates a newsstand in Bredensalt and still sells zines and prints elsewhere, a patchwork of projects and income. They make it work.
Consignment at the bookstore and off of like our subscription program and off of like sales of the shop, and like we're able to pay for this space. And like every day I'm like, whoa, how are we doing that? Like, it's not like by a huge margin. We're working with like the hundreds of dollars here, but it's working and we've been able to sustain it.
On a chilly night in November, producer Anthony and I visited the shop.
Anthony?
Yeah.
This is Amanda.
Hey, Amanda. How's it going?
My name's Nick.
Nick?
Hey. Yeah.
Are you recording?
Yep.
He was recording all of that, guys.
Always recording.
The space is cozy, colorful, and eclectic. There are plants and bright bookshelves and tables covered in books and Riso-printed zines and posters.
Anthony, they're printing the calendar.
Oh, they are? Oh. The 2026 calendar.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Amazing.
We have the Bernal Books annual Riso-printed calendar at our desks at the Finest, so we were a little starstruck when we heard they were printing the 2026 edition. At that moment, tucked in the back of the shop, their friend Kevin was printing away.
What color did you just put in?
I put in a yellow drum. Typically, we print lightest to darkest. Mm-hmm. It just makes the process easier.
This art uses three layers of color. This particular page has yellow, pink, and blue. Kevin runs the same 150 sheets of paper through the Riso machine for each layer. He picks up each large cylinder of bright ink, latches it into place, and lets the machine do the rest.
So if you see, even with two colors, it's already so much more like dynamic.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying to see it come together.
100%.
Like one color at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
14 local artists contributed to the 2026 calendar. While most of the artists are familiar with designing for Risograph, the Riso can be unpredictable. An exact replica of your image isn't always a guarantee.
Because it's not like a completely like machine-run process, it's like every sheet of paper will be jostled around a little bit, become like imperfect.
This page is a colorful take on the famous Matisse painting of people dancing in a circle holding hands with an intricate border. But each of the 150 copies Kevin printed turned out a little different from stencil and paper movement or how each color layered or saturated. The effect is one of a kind and undeniably cool.
I don't even know what happened here.
Oh, yeah, with the, like, white?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, like that pink was supposed to go in that white spot.
Kevin has worked with Nick and Amanda almost since the beginning when they fixed up their first Riso. Just like George Weider, Kevin loves the Risograph, but it's the people he works with that really keep him coming back.
I pretty much wouldn't do this if it wasn't for that aspect. Mm-hmm. I think any, like, do-it-yourself, like, DIY space is ultimately about like the community you build. Doing all this like labor oftentimes for free isn't really worth it.
Right.
If you don't like what you're doing. I think I'd have a hard time doing this with people who I don't consider my friends.
Today, Bernal Books is a lot more than printing.
We were able to amass like just an enormous group of friends, really. Like, they're all volunteers who run their own projects and their own programming, but like people who come here every week on a Tuesday, like just because they want to. It's pretty crazy.
Just on the other side of the printer room door, those dedicated collaborators were assembling for that weekly meeting. passing around homemade bread.
It was like rosemary?
No, it's za'atar.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like
Once everyone got their snacks, I asked them about what draws them to risograph printing, DIY art, and this community.
Print is such an accessible medium, and it's kind of lowbrow, and it could be any sort of format, poetry, comics, illustration.
That's like where zines came from, like printing pamphlets and like spreading them around.
Kind of what I was thinking is like the Risso printing and like the idea that we have this means of getting information out is kind of like the method. And then like the message is creative community.
At a time when it seems like almost our entire life takes place on a screen, when loneliness is reaching an all-time high, Burn All Books is about coming together in person and doing tangible, creative projects collectively. If Jan Dirk, Knust, and their movement came out of protests, in a way, it almost seems like Burn All Books is also in part a protest against isolation.
I think we're all in that cycle of trying to get off of like the endless scroll and try to make things in person.
Some of their programs and initiatives are pretty clearly centered on just making friends.
We have a program called Platonic Speed Dating.
And I was a participant first, and I'd never done speed dating, so it was terrifying. But the Platonic one was like especially wholesome because it was around Thanksgiving last year. And then I went to a Friendsgiving with some people that had been there. So it was really beautiful.
Burn All Books hosts PowerPoint parties, book and film clubs, concerts, writing groups, art shows, and workshops. These are open to anyone interested, and you can check their Instagram or website for upcoming events. Or you can just pop in anytime to browse or pick up a book. Up front is the shop, stocked with indie titles and prints from around the world. And of course, San Diego.
So, and like all of it's stuff we just sort of decided to do. And it's just amazing, like what can happen if you get just like a few people in a group to work on something. Like that's the best part of this for us. It's like a friend-making venture. So this is like how we made friends as adults.
It sounds simple, but for Nick, trying new things with a community of people he really cares about has also been transformative. I don't
know. Maybe the dream was like to feel like connected to other people, to be like off of spaces where like connection feels like disingenuine or like manufactured, and to do the messy work of like meeting people and having to be yourself and like failing, you know, like to like that stuff's hard, and like it's easier to not do all that work and to like live a whole life. So I feel lucky, like I've like found a way out of something that I'm not sure that I was like aware that I was like trapped in or something. I don't know.
Every day I'm here, I'm just like, wow, I get to do this again. I'm just gonna enjoy this for as long as it lasts. But yeah, we do try to do as much as we can to like sustain ourselves for the future, because it's so, it's important to a lot of people besides us. But I think that also makes it more solvent, right? Like people are like invested in it with their time and, you know, their relationships. And that means something too.
The human connections that Burn All Books has built are hard to measure, but it gives their venture real value. And that's what's at the root of the Riso art movement's winding story. People figuring stuff out in community and making art. Back in the Netherlands, Jan Dirk didn't like the world he was handed, so he helped build a new one. With Knust, he didn't just pioneer a new way of printing. He figured out how to resurrect old, unwanted machines because he knew they could still make something beautiful. Years later, in the United States, George scrapped together a collection of risograph printers, one wiki post at a time, helping to spawn the kind of workshops that introduced Manda and Nick to riso printing. And after that life-changing workshop, they built Burn All Books, part store, part press, part network of art, events, and true friends. It's an empowering idea. If you want to make something, whether it's an art print in those unmistakable hues of pinks and yellows, or make a community, figure out how to DIY it, then just try.
I don't think I ever really considered that art could have like a permanent place in my life even until I sort of discovered DIY. Most things you really can just teach yourself to some extent. You can sort of learn how to produce just about anything, whether it's like a variety show, a zine, a music fair, or a booklet, or a workshop series. Like, someone knows how to do it or has done something similar and is going to be willing to teach us about it. You just have to be brave enough to ask, I guess.
Special thanks to Amanda and Nick Bernal, Kevin, Paloma, Jill, Philip, Noel, Tia, and everyone at Bernal Books. And to Jan-Dirk de Vilde and Joyce Goulet from Canoost, and to George Weider for their help with this episode. You can find photos of Risograph art and Risograph machines on our website at kpbs.org/thefinest. And thank you so much for listening. If this episode resonated with you, please subscribe, leave a rating, or comment. It makes a real difference and helps stories like these reach more people. Also, we print them out and read them out loud at our desks. Next week on The Finest, we meet a local entrepreneur challenging the chocolate industry from inside her home kitchen.
I was really amazed. I was like, what? You can do this at home? Are you kidding me?
I'm your host, Julia Dixon Evans. Our producer, lead writer, and composer is Anthony Wallace. Our engineer is Ben Redlosk, and our editor is Chrissy Nguyen.
KPBS Roundtable offers perspectives from those telling San Diego stories. Join us for weekly conversations with reporters and storytellers, adding depth and context to the headlines driving the news in the San Diego region. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.